So that's the key thing with this is esoteric. So you're going to see a lot of this. This is the big thing with Kabbalism. It's, ooh, it's received. It's mysterious. Okay. These are key words. I'm kind of saying these on purpose so that you realize what's happening. But that's the key thing. It's mysterious. Not everyone gets this. Versus God, Jesus, who gets Jesus? Anyone is allowed to get Jesus. There isn't supposed to be a mystery. It's been revealed. Do you see the opposites here? I just want you guys to see the opposites. So esoteric, it's mysterious, understood by few. I like the way you broke that down, Evelyn. So let's go through a little bit of history here. So Eastern Mediterranean, late antiquity. This is where the esotericism starts. I know it's a little bit of history I'm going to go through here. Bear with me. So there's going to be three main movements. We'll call them movements, okay? Hermetism, I think, is the way you say it. Hermetism, Gnosticism, and then Neoplatonism. Okay, so this is 1, 2, and 3. We're going to talk about these three. Why the heck are we talking about all this crazy stuff? Because you need to know what's going on out there, and you need to know when people are talking, it's all this junk, okay? That's usually what it all comes down to. All the crazy, weird stuff that you hear almost always has a connection to right back to this stuff, the esoteric stuff, okay? That's the key here. These three are kind of where it all, a lot of it begins, I'll put it that way. So, Hermetism. Sounds like hermits, but it's not hermits. It has a connection to Hermes, that old mythical god, right? But it's actually not Hermes. Hermetism had this belief of the three parts of wisdom. Okay, and this is important because it's going to connect to stuff later. Alchemy, astrology, theurgy. Theurgy is when you invoke other gods. All right, I told you it's going to be weird, right? But think about it. Do I know how to do it? No. Do you know how to invoke other gods? No. But if you can be part of this circle, you can understand this received type of knowledge, right? And then you can be one of us, right? Join us. So this starts sometime in the first century. So key elements, right? This is where what they believe in, what they study in, the three parts of wisdom. In medicine, there's the staff with the two snakes. That's caduceus. That's where this came from. So originally that symbol comes from hermetism. So just, I know, little weird facts there. When you go on Jeopardy one day, trust me, you're going to need this. But just to see where all these things are coming from. Okay, so that's, in a nutshell, that's hermetism. There's a lot more to it, but it's not worth getting into. Gnosticism is probably like the one that you guys have all heard of. That's the most obvious one. Gnosticism, Greek, gnosko, I know, right? It's all about knowing. Okay, everything is about knowledge, knowing. Okay, especially, quote-unquote, deep knowledge. Something that's deep. Okay, hopefully you guys can start to see the picture coming together with Kabbalism. Deep, ooh, right? It's a different level of knowledge. You see, do you see how sexy that sounds? It's very, you know, wow, ooh, right? I'm saying those things on purpose because you got to realize when it comes to God, well, specifically Jesus, the message is amazing. But once you're in, it's difficult for it to be so amazing because you've already received the gospel and you believe, right? I'm getting ahead of myself. I'll get to that a little bit later. But so Gnosticism is interesting because it starts off with the Jews in the first century and the second century, kind of in there somewhere. But then it also kind of mixes in with some Christians back then. So Gnosticism is a little weird. It kind of spreads out a little bit further. And it just has its weird roots. I think that's interesting that it weaves in and out of other beliefs because we'll get to that. So, and then if you fast forward to the 4th century with Gnosticism, you'll see a lot more Christians into it. So you're going to see that happening a lot. So Neoplatonism. Actually, yes, it's actually Platonic is the philosophy. So it's a Platonic philosophy that they believe in. And the guy's name is Plotinus. So this one is actually more philosophical, philosophy. And what's philosophy big on? Well, specifically with this one, metaphysical, okay? The existence, right? Being. So this was big with metaphysical stuff here. So what do we have here? We have Hermetism, three parts of wisdom, Gnosticism, deep knowledge, quote unquote. Starts with Jews. Neoplatonism, philosophical stuff. metaphysical being. Okay. Now what we do is we fast forward in time. Take these three. These are the three key beliefs, okay, of the day, outside of Christianity, outside of Judaism, all right? These are the three evolutions, esoteric evolution, okay? We're going to fast forward to the 17th century. That's pretty far down the line. But just to get to our point, around the year 1000-something, 1100, 1200, you start to see some Kabbalistic writings and things that you know, people talking about Kabbalah and those types of beliefs. And that's clearly about what? So about the 1000s. Well, we'll say that, just 1000. Here's where we start to see some Kabbalah talk. But it's not big yet. That's the key thing. Kabbalah is not big yet. They're just kind of dibble and dabbling in them. But what's happening is you're going to see a lot of these three elements in there with Kabbalism. Again, you can see some magical, weird things going on with these guys. Gnosticism, ooh, deep knowledge, right? And then we have Neoplatonism, philosophy, metaphysical, right? Being, okay? Ooh, very, very, again, very sexy, do you see? Oh, and this is why I wrote this down. There was about 1 million people who were kind of dibbling and dabbling in Kabbalism. 15th, somewhere around there, 13th to 15th century, it starts to get famous again, starts to pick up some steam again. Spain, France, these areas are starting to pick up some steam, with the Jews, of course. And they're starting to pick up steam, and now all of a sudden, Kabbalah is cool again. It's trending again, okay? We're going to use, you know, pop culture words. It's really kicking in. So we're going to fast forward to the main part is here, the 17th century. I want you to see what's happening, okay? 17th century, we have some interesting societies that kind of start to evolve from Kabbalism or Kabbalist circles or Kabbalist kind of mindsets. 17th century, apparently the big thing became more like with the Freemasons. Have you guys heard of the Freemasons? A lot of their stuff comes from Kabbalism. And you can kind of see the roots of it here. Let's see here. Deep knowledge, right? Esoteric. What do we say with esoteric? It's mysterious, understood by few. It's a special group, okay? Do you see? Secret societies. Ooh, do you see? It's all kind of interwoven. It's all connected together. So that's where you get your Freemasons. A lot of stuff starts there around the 17th century. Fast forward to the 19th century here. This is where we get some hybrids, some more hybrids, all from this stuff, all just coming through over here. That's where you get your occulty, weird kind of stuff, and I'm going to go through a couple of them here, because you're going to see it all kind of coming together in a weird way. This is just good knowledge, guys. So, Theosophical Society, 19th century. This is established by a woman named Helena Blavatsky. Well, if you read books on Hitler, that name comes up. Just saying. In fact, you guys have seen the swastika, right? The emblem actually comes from her symbol. She has like this, whether it's a flag or what they use as their emblem, it's a whole bunch of different things. And the very top is the swastika, but it's not sideways like the Nazis. But that's part of their emblem, okay? Part of what they use in the Theosophic Society there. So what they do is they take, in a nutshell, this is, I'm really probably ripping this apart, but what happens is they take a whole bunch of different religions and it all kind of comes together. And I'm cheapening it just for the sake of explaining. I don't even want to bother getting too far into it, so I just kept really simple notes on this one. But it's a bunch of ancient religions, ancient symbols. They kind of bring it all together. If you look at the flag, it's funny. You could see it's like, okay, a little bit of here, a little bit of there, chop suey, all right? It's a little bit of chop suey of a little bit of everything. But here's what happens is they have this thing where they believe in masters, okay? They have these masters. And in fact, let me read this. The Theosophist masters are attempting to revive knowledge of an ancient religion once found across the world and which will again come to eclipse the existing world religions. All right, so that's all this is. They're trying to take old stuff and somehow, some weird way, bringing it into maybe using some of this, remember the theurgy kind of stuff? You see how it all connects in a weird way? Invoking other gods, quote unquote, right? And they're the ones who are going to revive these old ancient religions. That's what these guys believed. So this Blavatsky lady, it's weird. I think if I remember correctly, I had read about this a long time ago, but you can find her writings in Hitler's own library. He got a lot of stuff from her. Now, I don't think her stuff was particularly evil, is what they quote or what they say. But it's interesting that a lot of her stuff is kind of in there because Master Race kind of stuff comes up. It's kind of weird. So, but anyway, interesting stuff there. Another one that comes up around the same time. So we have the Theosophic Society. And then we have another hybrid here, the Thelema. The Thelema group. It's a Greek word. It's the same word, you know, when Jesus says, thy will be done, Thelema. Will. Thelema. That's what that means, Thelema, will. So they're called a religious philosophy. It just, do you see how it just gets weirder and weirder and weirder? Okay. Religious philosophy or a spiritual philosophy. And the principle of this religious philosophy is the law of the Thelema. What does that mean? What does Thelema mean again? The will. Law of the will. Maybe you guys have heard this one. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. I don't know if you guys have heard of that. Anton LaVey, he's the guy who wrote the Satanic Bible. He's the guy who uses that. That's a big line in the Satanic Bible. He gets it from here. Have you guys heard of that? The Satanic Bible? Yeah, when we were teenagers, it was like, oh, whoa, Satanic Bible, whoa. And of course, the guy's like bald. He has like not satanic, but he looks like the devil because he has like this little goatee. And it's like, ooh. When you're in high school, that stuff is interesting. So do what thou wilt. In fact, the whole thing says, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law, love under will. So the whole thing is about the will. And of course, the developer of that is Aleister Crowley. Okay, and that's same guy that Anton LaVey, the guy who writes the Satanic Bible. He's the big wig in Satanism. He's dead now, right? He's been dead. Yeah, he's been dead. So the way Aleister Crowley comes up with this belief system is he was on a honeymoon with his wife, and he went to Egypt back in the early 1900s. And he has a spiritual experience. Something happens to him when he's in Egypt. What's up with Egypt? Hint, hint, guys. What's up with Egypt? Egypt is a weird place, isn't it? It's a place of a lot of foreign gods, right? I think it's interesting that he has an experience out there. So then with this experience, he believes he was the prophet of the New Age based on his spiritual experience. So he is the prophet, apparently. But if you read a lot of Kabbalistic books, if you remember a couple weeks ago, we were talking about a Kabbalistic book, and they were actually quoting some stuff from Aleister Crowley stuff, Gematria work that Aleister Crowley has done, all connected to Kabbalism. So he uses some Kabbalistic stuff in his Thelema system, quote-unquote, okay? So we went through a really quick crash course of... But notice where it all starts. It's all esoteric, mysterious, understood by few... Secret societies coming, you know, way down. Do you see? It's all kind of the same junk. It's all the same junk, different labels, slightly a little different here, slightly a little bit different there. But they all kind of have like this weird connection here. Deep knowledge, philosophical, metaphysical stuff. You see that in New Age stuff all the time. Metaphysical, ooh, right? Astrology, of course, right? And you can see that in the occultic stuff, right? The astrology and ooh, how evil and demonic it is. Quick crash course. Any thoughts on that? I'm going to move on from that. But what I want you guys to do is let's go to the book of Genesis. Now remember we talked about it. You have to open yourself up. And isn't that weird? It's like it's so New Agey, isn't it? Isn't it funny? Like you hear like that's. Like, I almost feel like I'm. In fact, when I was reading some of the books, I'm like, I've heard this stuff before. Opening yourself up and all these weird dimensions. And then lo and behold, it's all the same stuff. It's all occult, New Age, just weird, you know, stuff. It's all connected. It's all. Same junk, okay, same junk. I'm using some words deliberately, on purpose. Genesis 3, by the way. Because I want to take the sex appeal away. I want to kill this golden calf, okay, whatever term you want to use. I want to kill it because there's nothing impressive about it. It's just sexy, that's all it is. That's all it has. It's just shiny, okay? That's all. It's like a new shiny toy, but it does nothing. It's just a toy. There's nothing behind it. It's dead. It's nothingness. So, in fact, let me read this to you. Opening yourself up, okay? This is the big thing with Kabbalism. What do you open yourself up to? The answer to that is higher reality. Ooh. To view the spirit within the matter, to raise our consciousness to the point where our perception of reality is completely changed and the divine within all creation is revealed. Ooh. Here's the problem I have with that. Is that it's like you do it. It's as if you have so much control to do this. But if you understand divinity and man, there's only so much you can do, obviously. But we're all limited. We're broken. Remember, the thing that I stand on, any sermon that I will preach is based on man is broken and we can't. Everything. If it doesn't start there, we got a problem. Okay, this makes me feel, keyword feel, like that's not the foundation. It's a problem. Man is broken and it needs someone to fix it. It's not you and I, it's not Kabbalism, it's not any of these. It can't be. Because if I'm broken, I can't fix something if I'm that broken. If we could say, my spirit, my soul is broken. It's broken completely. The DNA is ruined. All right? If I'm just using, you know, exaggerated words, but that's the idea, is it's that broken. And we needed a savior. It was something that had to be outside of us. All right? It couldn't be you in a higher reality, and, you know, me and tapping into some weird divine something. And notice the words I'm using, tapping into. Have you guys heard of words like that in Christianity? There's a church out in Northern California. They use weird words like that. Tapping into what? Bethel. Bethel is the church. But it's just weird. They'll use like these weird terms. Tapping into things. It's like, what do you mean tapping into things? It's God's either there or he's not. You can't just tap in. You can't make God appear. God is always there. You know, you can't make something appear that's always there. Just stuff like that kind of weirds me out. All right. So anyway, that was a side note, a little rant there. But Genesis 3. And you guys know this. You guys know Genesis 3 very well, but we're just going to read verse 4 and 5. But the serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." And you guys, I know you guys have read that many a times, right? There's nothing new there. But, you know, there are some sayings in here, like eyes will be open. There's a saying in Armenian that a person whose eyes are open, it's not literally like your eyes are open, but it's a saying like, oh, they're independent or they can handle it. Oh, their eyes are open. It sounds weird in English, but in Armenian it makes better sense. But it's a person who's independent, a person who can handle things on their own. No one can really pull a fast one on them, right? It's that kind of idea. I'm not saying that's what this means, but it's a similar idea where your eyes will be open, where you'll know things now. You'll know things. You'll have deep revelation. I read this because I want you to see it's the same old stuff. Again, nothing new. It looks shiny, but it's not shiny. Rebox it, recycle it, use some maybe different terms, maybe some different cultures, different places. Let's name a couple different new gods. Why not? Sure. Box it up, package, and, you know, sell it. That's all it is. But it's this right here, verse 5. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open, as if I can do something to fix me. That's all this is. Me and my independence, because I'm going to be better. And I can be better. In fact, and you will be like God. Do you see? It's the same stuff. It's me trying to be God. And we talked about this for many a weeks, right? What are we? We're the imagers, right? We work for him. We do what he wants us to do. We do his will, just like Jesus did, right? He did the Father's will. That's our job. That's what we're supposed to do. I'm not supposed to be God. Does that make sense? I think it's pretty simple, right? So, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. The whole knowing good and evil, the idea is their innocence now is going to be taken away. It's almost like a kid trying to be an adult too soon. Okay, I'll make a very bad analogy, but it'll be bad, but for good purposes. It's like a child having sex. That's absolutely disgusting. But I want it to be a disgusting idea because they're not supposed to do that at that age, right? Later on, fine. When you're an adult, right, do what you want. But when you're a child, you're not supposed to do that. And that's the idea here, is that your innocence is going to be taken away. And Satan, right, the serpent, is about to steal that away. And that's the idea here. I hope that makes sense. It's a horrible, you know, horrible analogy, I know, but I hope it hits home there. So be aware of that. That's the idea. Knowing good and evil, he just stole away their innocence. God gave them something. And here's Satan about to steal it. It's that extreme, okay? You know what's funny? A little side note here, verse 4. Should we talk a little Hebrew? Why not? The serpent, Nahash. Maybe you guys have heard of this one. Nahash is serpent, but it's also another definition would be the shiny one or something that's shiny. It's kind of weird, isn't it? Like this stuff. It's shiny. Ooh, it's cool. It's new. It's different. I haven't seen this before. It's all the same stuff. Do you see? It's all the same stuff. I'm trying to kill the shine, okay? I'm trying to show you that it just polished, but it's all rusty underneath. It's all the same junk. It's all the exact same stuff. So it looks shiny, okay? But it was literally death, right? With the serpent. It was death. So But yeah, Nahash has another meaning behind it. Something shining. The exact same thing here with Kabbalism, with all the esoteric stuff. It just feels shiny. Okay, that's all it is. I have something new. Ooh, right? That's all it is. Nothing new. Nothing new under the sun. Okay, nothing new under the sun. It's all the same stuff repackaged. All that said, what do we do with us and our faith? We believe in Jesus, not this stuff. This is very, very different from what we believe. Does it have little threads like how we started? Remember, how did we start? Kind of like the first sentence, or repeat it here. Kabbalism is about losing yourself. It has such a similarity to how John says, you know, he must increase, I must decrease. Do you see? Can you see how it can interweave and really trick someone into believing, well, this stuff must be good? It isn't. But it has to have an ounce of truth for it to even last. It's the only way Satan does it. Same thing with Genesis 3. He takes an ounce of truth. Did God really tell you this and that? He takes an ounce, just a little bit. He takes, you know, little pieces here and there, and then he puts in his own quote-unquote truth, and it's not truth, it's all a lie. So be aware of this stuff. So don't be like the little kid who's tricked by the shiny coin, okay? It's, all right, can't buy anything for 25 cents. Almost useless.
Finally Alive Radio Sermon Edition is made possible by cheerful givers like you. If you'd like to support us, please visit finallyalive.com/give. That's finallyalive.com/give. Thank you for listening to today's message preached by Gary Aritz. We'll meet you again next time when we look at God's Word with your very own Christian counselor, Gary Aritz, and learn how to be finally alive in Christ.